One of the more interesting stories coming out of 2026 World Cup qualifying was Uzbekistan. No, not just because they opted to sign 2006 World Cup champion Fabio Cannavaro as their head coach for this summer's tournament, in spite of his managerial record. But the country that was once the crossroad for trade between Europe and Asia is one of the countries making their World Cup debut in North America, and their national team sits at a crossroad themselves. They can become a football power in Asia, should they continue on their current trajectory. As a testament to their talent, even in going through two coaches during qualifiers, they were still convincing. A restructuring and a more deliberate focus on their youth program has already seen talent from the White Wolves crop up in Europe's top five leagues, one of whom won the award for Asia's Best Young Footballer of 2025. Hello, welcome to Rabona TV's World Cup Curiosities on Uzbekistan, part of our series covering the nations that I am most curious about, and those countries and stories may not get the attention that they deserve. How their history has shaped their football culture, how they have evolved through history to a point where they're at now, World Cup 2026 combatants. Sound good? Let's go. Uzbekistan sits squarely in Central Asia and has been vitally important throughout ancient history. Looking at modern-day Uzbekistan, you can still get a taste of that history through key cities that sat upon the famed Silk Road trading routes. Conquerors like Alexander the Great, the Mongols, and Timur have all taken control of what is modern-day Uzbekistan, all leaving their impact on culture and architecture, and in many cases, the cities have been remarkably preserved. Uzbekistan actually contains five cities that are UNESCO World Heritage Sites, the most notable of which being Bukhara, Khiva, and of course the Pearl of the East, Samarkand. Changes in power continued, with the Russian Empire ultimately annexing Uzbekistan along with other Central Asian countries during the 1800s, and in 1924, they established the Uzbek Soviet Socialist Republic, or Uzbek SSR, as I'll call it. But before that, Russian soldiers had already brought football to the area, and in 1912, residents of the city of Kokand formed what is considered to be the oldest football club in Central Asia, now known as Kokand 1912. They most recently played in Uzbekistan's second tier of professional football. The Uzbek SSR national team was formed in 1926 and would take part in Soviet Spartakiads, which are sporting events, or were sporting events, that the Soviets hosted and invited some other European nations to compete in as well. In their first ever match, Uzbek SSR defeated Switzerland 8-4. However, they were ultimately just a regional team and would only take part in friendlies every few years, given they fell under the umbrella of USSR. Later in 1981, they would go all the way to the final of the Spartakiad, only to lose to the Ukrainian SSR 1-0. Similarly, the Uzbek SSR Football Federation was founded in 1946 as a regional branch under the Soviet football system, but things were happening at the club level. For example, Paktakor Tashkent was founded in 1956, which basically became Uzbekistan's top club in the Soviet era and beyond, as in the Soviet era, they were the only Central Asian club to make it to the Soviet top league, finishing as high as sixth in 1962. By the late 1970s, Paktakor was the pride of pre-independence Uzbek football. They played in the top league, they had a squad of almost exclusively Uzbek-born players, they played a style that was exciting to watch, high energy, attacking football. I mean, considering there was no national team for the people of the Uzbek SSR, Paktakor filled that void in a way, with the Republic's football supporters all getting behind them, as they would a national team. Paktakor had a match scheduled against Dinamo Minsk, and the squad and staff took off on a flight from Tashkent on August 11, 1979. With an hour and a half of their five-hour flight remaining, the plane carrying 84 passengers and crew flew over the city of Dniprozerzinsk at an altitude of approximately 28,000 feet. And tragically, collided mid-air with another passenger plane. It goes without saying, all 178 passengers from the two planes passed. Looking at this through the lens of football and the growing football culture in the Uzbek SSR, this wasn't just the horrible loss of Paktakor's entire squad and staff, but of a team that had become the symbol of Uzbek football in absence of a national team, in absence of national pride, their cultural pride. They were the representation of what Uzbek football could be and the direction that they were heading in. The Soviet government restrained the truth from being released at first, taking over a week to admit what had happened and determining that two air traffic controllers from Kharkiv were responsible. But the Soviet Football Federation guaranteed that Paktakor would not lose their place in the top league for several years. But that loss was felt for many, many more years than that, with the 1979 disaster being a shadow that hung over Uzbekistan's football even into independence post-1991. Because when you think about it, it wasn't just a beloved, talented team that was lost, but with it, talented players that would have led the way for generations, talented coaches whose experience and know-how would have been the base to build off of for generations. This disaster meant that Uzbekistan were essentially starting over at a football level. With the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991, Uzbekistan declared their independence but weren't necessarily ready to govern themselves. The economy was hit, GDP fell, and of course, in this kind of situation, football was not at all a priority when it came to using their funds. That said, in 1992, the Uzbekistan national team was thrown together. Their first match as an independent nation was on June 17th, 1992, against Tajikistan. They drew 2-2 in the 1992 Central Asian Cup, a defunct tournament that was played just once. Uzbekistan finished second, 2 points behind Kazakhstan. They made one massively important decision in 1994 to compete in the Asian Confederation, AFC, rather than to join UEFA as their Central Asian neighbors Kazakhstan did. Well, Kazakhstan was initially in the AFC, but they joined UEFA in 2000. The difference in thinking is interesting. Kazakhstan figured the heightened competition would help improve their game, while Uzbekistan thought they would be more competitive in the AFC. They are going to a World Cup now. They've played in the knockout stages of the Asian Cup as well, while Kazakhstan have struggled in UEFA. By joining the AFC and FIFA, they were eligible to compete in the 1994 Asian Games hosted by Hiroshima, Japan. The Uzbekistan Football Federation allegedly only had a budget of $14,000, so they could only afford to send 17 players, a coach, an assistant, and a doctor who was forced to also be the team's masseuse. Expectations were not high, especially when you consider they were in a group alongside Saudi Arabia, a powerhouse in Asia at that time. Saudi Arabia won the Asian Cup in 1984, then made the final in the next four competitions, winning it twice more in 88 and 96. With this in mind, in the first group stage match, Uzbekistan defeated Saudi Arabia with a resounding 4-1 victory. They topped the group with a perfect record of 4 wins from 4, scoring 15 and conceding 5. They beat Turkmenistan 3-0 in the quarters, beat South Korea 1-0 in the semis, and beat China quite handily in the final 4-2. 2 years after their creation, they had their first title, an Asian Games gold medal. This came from out of nowhere and is referred to as the miracle of 1994. And it was a miracle in more ways than one, as this kind of success was unfortunately unsustainable. There's virtually no investment, football infrastructure was virtually non-existent, and they began a massive downward spiral from the mid-90s onward. They would win their first ever Asian Cup match in 1996, again defeating China, they wouldn't make it past the group stage, and there would be little to smile about for the White Wolves of Uzbekistan for some time. The 2000 Asian Cup was a national embarrassment, a draw with Qatar before losing 8-1 to Japan and 5-0 to Saudi Arabia. When you get humiliated, you have to reconsider your approach to everything, and that's exactly what the Uzbekistan Football Federation did. The outcome? No more focusing on the short term. Try to be competitive, of course, but they were looking far into the future now, with a stated intent on focusing on youth development. And the establishment of their first youth football department in 2004 was a major step. That said, things were improving on the senior national team front as well. Uzbekistan made it as far as the quarterfinals in consecutive Asian Cups in 2004 and 2007, with 2011 taking them a step further thanks to Uzbekistan's new national footballing hero, Server Jeparov, a two-time Asian Footballer of the Year. With him leading the way, Uzbekistan made a run to the semifinals of the 2011 Asian Cup. They were embarrassed by Australia in the semifinal, 6-0, but the progress wasn't lost on their fans when you consider that they had strong qualifying campaigns for the 2014 and 2018 World Cups as well, ultimately falling short, of course. The trajectory was plain to see. Consider also that Uzbekistan still managed to qualify for every single Asian Cup since 1996, now regularly making the knockout stages, and then add in the pièce de résistance, a talented younger generation emerging, you have evidence of Uzbekistan's priority of focusing on young talent bearing fruit already. Two of the pearls of Uzbekistan's focus on developing younger players are, of course, the all-time top scorer for the national team, Eldor Shomurodov, and the Man City sensation, Abdulkadir Kusunov. Shomurodov has had a solid career in Italy, representing Genoa, Roma, Spezia, Cagliari, but recently his loan to Istanbul Başakşehir saw him explode with 22 goals in 34 Super League appearances. He has 44 goals in 90 matches for the Uzbekistan national team, of which he is also the captain. He contributed 5 goals in this latest qualification cycle. Kusunov has perhaps eclipsed Shomurodov as far as fame goes and is seen as having the potential to be the brightest talent the nation has ever produced. His rise from Tashkent through Belarus to Lens in Ligue 1 and now at Manchester City at just 22 years of age has seen him become the shining example of Uzbekistan's aspirations. He was the first Uzbek player to play in the Premier League, and for 2025 he won the award for Asia's best young footballer. There are talents across the squad. Masharipov comes to mind as well, but the coach who really pulled things together for them was Sreko Katanech. With him, Uzbekistan went undefeated in the second round of AFC Asian qualifying, finishing behind Iran on goal difference. In the third round, Uzbekistan were in the same group as Iran once again and were undefeated in their first four matches, losing to Qatar in November of 2024, but bouncing back with a win over North Korea. With four matches remaining, Katanech resigned due to health reasons, causing plenty of fears among supporters. Uzbekistan were looking so promising, and sitting in second, it felt like they would finally secure qualification because all they had to do was finish in the top two. Would this derail them? In March of 2025, with Timur Kapadze as their coach, Uzbekistan knew that they would secure qualification with two victories. They got win one of two against Kyrgyzstan, but playing away to Iran was always going to be a tall order. 80 minutes into the match in Tehran, Uzbekistan were winning 2-1, but of course, the hero of Iran, Mehdi Taremi, drew them level and spoiled the party. Uzbekistan would have to wait until June to secure qualification. A win in Tehran would have been a gorgeous way to secure qualification, right? But qualification comes above all, and a 0-0 draw against the UAE was what took them over the line. When the final whistle blew, celebrations erupted across the country. The president presented cars and gifts to the players upon their return. And as the eighth team to qualify for the 2026 World Cup, Uzbekistan was also the first team from Central Asia to ever qualify for a World Cup. And so now they face a very tall order at the World Cup, getting grouped alongside DR Congo, Colombia, and Portugal, a contender to win the World Cup, according to some. New coach Fabio Cannavaro has vowed to not change what was working. Defensive solidity will be the base that they work off of, with counterattacks and set pieces providing them goal-scoring opportunities. Uzbekistan built up their football program and identity while they were under an empire, lost an entire generation to an incredible tragedy, survived their transition to independence with nothing, had success with a shoestring $14,000 budget, suffered humiliations on the pitch, and still built a team worthy of qualifying for the 2026 World Cup. Guys, thanks for watching this one, and be sure to let me know how you think Uzbekistan will do. Are they able to claim a scalp from Colombia or Portugal? Are they making the round of 32, since some third place teams will still make it through? Let me know. Be sure to subscribe for more World Cup content from me here at Rabona TV, and I will catch you in the next video. Later.